We think that this is critically important. We are really afraid that a major earthquake in the area around Diablo could absolutely be devastating and could lead to a kind of catastrophic nuclear accident like we saw at Fukushima.
The same kind of level, worse? Any idea?
Well, you know, it's terrible to even think about these things, but the fact is this is an extremely old, decrepit nuclear plant built in the 1960s, and there are two reactors there, and there's a great deal of irradiated nuclear fuel, the nuclear waste that comes out of the power plant lying there. So whereas, you know, you had a devastating disaster with three meltdowns at Fukushima, we have only two reactors at Diablo, and yet there's so much nuclear material there that if an accident were to lead to even a fraction of that radiation to enter into the environment, it would be an absolutely devastating accident. Depending on which way the wind blows, radiation released from a Diablo Canyon nuclear disaster could affect hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people in central and then southern California on the coast.
Wow. So now, how can people find out more about this case, about what Friends of the Earth is doing?
Well, certainly I'd encourage people to go to Friends of the Earth's website. That's www.foe.org. We make sure that all of the material that we publish, all of the court documents that we file and respond to are all up on our website. We think that one of the key issues here really is about transparency and democracy. Normal people have every right to understand what the risks of nuclear power are and to make decisions about do they want to accept those risks or do they want to have clean, safe, renewable energy of the 21st century replacing nuclear power, which is what we think should be happening. Certainly people can find these materials on our website, and I'd encourage people to educate themselves, and certainly we're always happy to talk to people about these risks.
Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners about what's going on down there at Diablo Canyon?
Well, I think that ultimately that the real issue here is whether or not we're going to accept dangerous, dirty technology of the 20th century or replace it with clean, renewable technology and energy efficiency technologies. And in many ways, I think that's a very simple choice, and it's a choice that we face throughout the United States. As we approach the anniversary of Fukushima, which is on March the 11th, I think that we can see what the cost of getting it wrong is. We need to shut down these dangerous nuclear plants before there's a disaster.
Damon Moglen, thank you so very much.
Thank you. I appreciate talking to you.
This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
The U.S. House of Representatives passed a spending bill today to fund the Department of Homeland Security through September 30th. The spending bill does not include amendments seeking to defund the president's executive actions on immigration, but it does include hundreds of millions of dollars to maintain the operation and expansion of family detention facilities across the country. A statement from the American Civil Liberties Union criticized the inclusion of the funding bill of $362 million to imprison thousands of mothers and children fleeing domestic abuse and lethal violence in Central America. The ACLU pointed out that mandatory detention of people awaiting their immigration proceedings violates the right to due process and is inefficient and costly.
31 new cases of Ebola have been reported outside the village of McKinney in Sierra Leone. The community of around 500 has been locked down by the army in fear that the local outbreak could spread further. The spike has been linked to one fisherman of the community who fled the quarantine at Freetown to seek treatment with a traditional faith healer back home. The man died within 24 hours of returning home. Within days, many members of his family became infected and embedded at the Ebola Treatment Center in McKinney. The Center for Disease Control puts the total number of deaths resulting from Ebola this past year at nearly 10,000.
The former CIA director David Petraeus pleads guilty in court to charges that he shared classified materials with his ex-mistress, Paula Broadwell. She was his biographer and used those materials in a book she was writing. The plea bargain calls for up to 1 year in prison. However, the prosecutors are recommending 2 years of probation and a $40,000 fine instead. Petraeus had kept the secret documents from his time as four-star general in the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq. For more about the leaked black books and the former CIA director's plea deal, we spoke with investigative journalist and award-winning blogger Marcy Wheeler. This is Jared Dantzler for KBOO News. I'm here speaking with Marcy Wheeler. Marcy is the Right to Know investigative journalist for Exposed Facts and blogs at EmptyWheel.net. She recently wrote, "Petraeus gets hand slapped for leaking." Welcome, Marcy, to KBOO News.
Thanks for having me.
And could you tell us what is the significance? Why is this plea deal exceptional? That David Petraeus has accepted.
Well, it's a big deal because it's increasingly clear that the government, particularly the Obama administration, which has long been really aggressive about pursuing leaks, has two standards of behavior. There's the low-level people like Jeffrey Sterling and John Kiriakou who get sent to prison, and there's people like David Petraeus who will get basically probation for leaking far more sensitive information and far more of it.
And Petraeus leaked this information to a mistress.
She was his biographer. And what he did is basically he had eight what he called black books of some of the most sensitive information that you could have. And he had collected things that had no business being outside of a secure location. I mean, he had things in there like covert officers' identities. He had conversations he had had with the president and other National Security Council conversations, deliberative information. He had code word programs in there. I mean, this was as sensitive as anything that has been leaked in recent history. And he basically gave her all of these for a number of days while she was working on the biography. And, you know, I think Petraeus' defenders say, well, it was never published. But one of the reasons this case is so outrageous is because 3 days before he lied to the FBI about having leaked this information to his mistress, he came out and said, well, what happened to John Kiriakou was right. It's a victory for us. It's a way to protect our covert officers' identities. And basically what Kiriakou had pled to was leaking one covert or confirming, not even leaking, one covert officer's identity, which also was not published. And so at some levels, they're very parallel, except that with Petraeus, it was many covert officers, again, never got published. And the disparate treatment and the fact that Kiriakou was the fact that that Petraeus's lies to the FBI were never even charged. I mean, that's just outrageous.
Has the Justice Department offered any explanation for this disparity?
I don't think that they, you know, they're not going to offer. They think, well, look, we've got a head, but it's just ridiculous. The disparate treatment between those two men is just utter nonsense and should be roundly condemned. I mean, I'm not saying that people should be sent to prison for many years under the Espionage Act for what they did, but there needs to be some kind of equity of treatment. And in this case, you know, there wasn't. And what Petraeus did was far, far worse. And moreover, what Kiriakou leaked the information because these people were torturers. He did it in the interest of the United States. Petraeus did it so that he could have sex.
Mm. Well, we will continue to follow this story and others like it, including the story of John Kiriakou and other whistleblowers out there. Again, I've been speaking with Marcy Wheeler. She's the Right to Know investigative journalist for Exposed Facts and blogs at EmptyWheel.net. Marcy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
The main square of the city of Ramallah in Palestine was strewn with a truckload of milk and yogurt on Monday. The action is a part of a campaign led by Palestinian activist Abdullah Kamel to boycott Israeli-made goods. Activists are now targeting goods produced by six major firms, removing the products from shelves and publicly destroying them. Last summer, over 2,000 Palestinians were killed in conflict between Palestinians and Israeli armed forces. Since then, the Palestinian Authority has joined the International Criminal Court and filed charges against Israel for war crimes. Now Israel has cut off the transfer of tax revenues to Palestine, a move the EU's foreign policy chief called a violation of the Oslo Accords. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said, "Israel is withholding our money, and this means that the state of Palestine will face a crisis." The recent boycott of Israeli commodities aims to call attention to the unpaid taxes. Palestinian activists are joined by around 700 artists internationally who denounce Israel's apparent violation of human rights.
And now, the latest in news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today. Israeli soldiers invaded the town of Kabatia near the northern West Bank city of Jenin on Tuesday at dawn. During the invasion, the soldiers shot and injured a young man while scores of residents suffered the effects of tear gas inhalation. Eyewitnesses said that clashes took place in the town after several armored Israeli military vehicles invaded it and that the soldiers fired rounds of live ammunition, gas bombs and concussion grenades. A young man identified as Muhammad Salah Hadawani, 20 years of age, was shot by a live round in his right leg and was moved to Jenin Governmental Hospital for treatment. Elsewhere, Israeli soldiers kidnapped three children on Tuesday, including a 7th grade school child, in the southern West Bank city of Hebron. Eyewitnesses said that the child, Maher Abu Ramale, 12, was heading to the Ibrahimiyya school in the old city of Hebron when the soldiers stopped him, searched him and his school bag. They added that the soldiers repeatedly kicked and beat the child for carrying a sharp object and took him to a military post in the city where the soldiers and a number of Israeli extremists attacked him again. In related news, a number of colonist settlers assaulted two children from the Ibrahimiyya school on Tuesday. When Israeli soldiers arrived at the scene, they also attacked the children and kidnapped them. On Monday evening, several Israeli soldiers, accompanied by a number of Israeli extremists living in a nearby illegal colony, attacked five Palestinians in their farmlands near Bethlehem and kidnapped them. Villagers said that the kidnapped Palestinians were harvesting rondinilla plants in their lands in Kisan village, close to the illegal Israeli colony illegally built on privately owned Palestinian lands when they were assaulted. In Gaza, Israeli soldiers fired rounds of live ammunition targeting a number of Palestinian farmers in their own land east of Gaza City. Eyewitnesses said that soldiers stationed on military towers across the border fence fired live rounds and smoke bombs on Palestinian agricultural lands in the Az-Zaytuna and Ash-Shuja'iyya neighborhoods in addition to Juhra Dik area. They stated that farmers had to leave their lands fearing harm and additional Israeli military escalation. Israeli soldiers constantly attack farmers and workers in Palestinian lands close to the border fence in the northern and eastern parts of the coastal region. The attacks are largely accompanied by assaults on local fishers and their boats in Palestinian territorial waters and even while docked on shore. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015 News Roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jared Dantzler, Jim Thompson, Doug McVeigh, Kristen Yount, Nicole Weinstock, and Mark Palmer. Special thanks to Mark Palmer. Our engineer is Sequoina Wright, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. I'm Nicole Weinstock.
I'm Jared Dantzler. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on Wednesday Talk Radio, host Paul Roland speaks with longtime Salem activist Michael Donnelly about his article on Green Crony Capitalism, Oregon's Governor and the Grifters. At 9, on Political Perspectives, KBOO speaks with investigative journalist Shane Harris about his new book, At War, The Rise of the Military Internet Complex. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, hear the KBOO Bike Show and news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support, and for your community, for this, your community radio station. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Good night, Nicole.
Good night, Jared. And stay tuned for Out Loud next.
As citizens of a so-called democratic society, we need to have information that ranges from A to Z, not what we have, which is A to B.
KBOO is proud to present An Evening with David Barsamian, Wednesday, March 4th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. All proceeds will benefit KBOO Community Radio. One of America's most tireless and wide-ranging investigative journalists, David Barsamian is the host of Alternative Radio. Again, that's An Evening with David Barsamian, Wednesday, March 4th, at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Women's Day this Sunday for live music from the KBOO studios from 7 to 10 p.m. Shirley Certain and Just Jess will host Annie Dang, Rachel Taylor Brown, and